Welcome to the Events Innovator Show, where we explore the ideas and strategies that are transforming events. Get ready to unlock the secrets to creating extraordinary experiences. And now, here's your host, Phil Michon.
Well, welcome everybody to the Event Innovator Show, where I feature leaders who are making a difference in the world of events, experiences, culture building, and all the things. Today, we're going to talk about speaking as a way of making experiences better. And I'm bringing in Kyle Gray. He is a speaker coach, and he has been helping speakers for, I think, about a decade improve their abilities to get on stage and make an impact. And we talk some about some of the things that speakers do to get in the way of themselves and things that organizers can do to set up speakers for success. So I think you're really going to enjoy this. Speaking is a great way to lead, to show thought leadership. So here we go. Welcome, everybody. I'm excited to have another conversation today that I think is going to be a game changer for some of you in the way you think about your event. And if you're a speaker, the way that you think about speaking. I've got with us today Kyle Gray. He is a speaker coach and a storytelling strategist. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Phil. I'm very excited to be here.
I was on Kyle's podcast recently, and we were thinking about what can we do for an audience of event owners and event producers that would be a great conversation. And I want to lean in, Kyle, to your expertise in working with speakers. But you said before someone even thinks about speaking, they need to think about the clarity of their message. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. I find one of the biggest mistakes that speakers make, and it's very natural and understandable, is we have spent many, many years becoming the experts that we are. We immerse ourselves in the problems that we solve. We study them deeply. And while this is essential for being able to solve the problem, it often creates distance between our communication of what we say and what our audience needs to hear. And I find most speakers and experts tend to create talks and messages that satisfy themselves and their own perspectives rather than meeting their audience where they really need to be met. A lot of times they still are somewhat effective as a speaker, maybe like a C or a C minus grade, if we could assign like a metric to it, but they miss out on performing in the way that is really going to get the results that they're seeking for their business, get the results that their audience is hoping for. And a lot of times the talks become forgettable in an unfortunate way. And by focusing on who your audience is and what they really need and where they're at in the level of conversation, can simplify and streamline and make the process of speaking a lot more fun for the speaker instead of reading off your slides or trying to give as much information as possible, to really being present and aware and have fun while you're on stage.
All right, Kyle, that does sound like it's obvious, but hard to do when we are preparing because we kind of get involved with ourselves. How did you discover this? Like, there's got to be a journey that happened to get to this conclusion.
Yeah. What I've discovered with nearly a decade of working with speakers and experts and entrepreneurs is that our own experiences, the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves, put a lens over what we think is valuable and what we think is interesting that really doesn't serve us on stage. And one of the most important ways that I discovered this was when I set out to be an entrepreneur somewhere in my mid-20s. And the only thing that I knew that I wanted to do with my life was I wanted to be able to travel the world. I lived a lot in South America, Argentina, Peru, Brazil, Colombia. And I started hearing about how people were building businesses from their laptops and traveling all over the world. And I wasn't sure if I could do this. I knew how to speak Spanish, but that didn't seem like a particularly helpful thing. And when I was living in Peru, I took a trip down to the Amazon, and as a young 20 something, did a rope swing into an Amazonian lake. I got very sick with something called Giardia.
Yep.
And had to go to a clinic, and they gave me some kind of injection, and then didn't really know how to take care of myself. This cascaded into poor gut health, which became fatigue, anxiety, joint pain. And in my late 20s, an autoimmune condition called Hashimoto's disease. I can remember the first coach that I had ever worked with offering the idea that what I had gone through would become my superpower. And I laughed at him. I almost hung up the Skype call at the time because it was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard, for sure. A few years later, I found myself, my career was progressing as my health was regressing. And I found myself facilitating a speaker's workshop filled with health and wellness experts. And I sat down next to one woman who said, "Hi, my name's Dr. Grace Liu, and I help people with chronic autoimmune conditions overcome them with better gut health." I was a little bit aware of gut health at the time, but I started speaking about my experience. "So your clients do this, they want this, but that happens." And her jaw dropped. And she said, "You need to come work with me." I started helping her ghost write a book. We reframed how she talked about her offers and created a signature talk, and her business started to take off. She started working with me and her Hashimoto's protocol, and a lot of the things that were the worst thing ever to happen to me became a unique advantage. It gave me an entirely new value and perspective on my health that I didn't have before, and it set me apart as a marketer and as a thought leader for this particular audience. Now, before this, I looked at my own life and I looked at these things I didn't want to talk about. I wasn't proud of. I was frustrated with. But by changing my perspective and my lens, they became some of the most important things. And I find this same pattern in many of the people that I work with. We're sitting on a treasure trove of stories and experiences, not just from our experience getting results as a practitioner of whatever sort, but from our own life and perspectives. But because of our own lens, we think that they're not valuable. And we go up on stage trying to prove ourselves, trying to give enough information, trying to share all that we do instead of who we are. And with a simple shift in first thinking about who our clients are and what they need, and then assessing our stories and our teaching, not just from an intellectual level, but from an emotional level, we can get a lot more power and we can create the authority that we want on our stage, not from our achievements alone, at least, but from the real essence of who we are and our vision.
Kyle, I appreciate you going into detail on your personal story because it helps make sense of why this is so important to you and the discovery of going from real crisis to this place of recognizing that that is actually one of your superpowers is the ability to connect around something that felt really weak. I'd like you to dig into what you said there right at the end, because we need to, as a speaker, listen to the event organizer and see the intersection of our story and how that might serve the audience. I can hear someone who's, let's say, in the marketing space or the accounting space or engineering space saying, "Well, what does your story with gut health have to do with my audience?" How do you build that bridge of your being really you, the authentic you, to also serve that audience and what they think they came to learn?
There's a couple of things, and event planners are some of the They don't get nearly the respect or attention that they deserve from speakers, and they're often a very missed resource. They know their audience so well. They've been practicing with these people. They have personal relationships with these people and are a real treasure trove of information for speakers. And you can often pull a lot of information, which serves them. They want to tell you these things. They want to create great events. But we're so busy thinking about the things that we want to say or the things that we want to achieve that we often miss these things. And so the way I work with people is I have very simple but powerful frameworks, not just for how to tell an origin story, something that you would share at the beginning of your talk, but how to set up your teaching in a way that adds value to both you, the speaker, the event hosts, and also most importantly, the audience. And this changes the perspective when we think of like a great teaching point is not necessarily teaching people how to do something. It's not the same thing that you taught your clients that got them a result, teaching them in exactly the same way. It's not expressing or trying to compress 10 years of an MBA or a doctorate degree and all of the research that you've done over time. One thing that's really powerful is just thinking about what are one of the limiting beliefs, what are one of the biggest objections that our audience has to taking action on this. And instead of trying to teach them everything that they need to know to solve the problem, what's one thing that we could teach them to open their perspective to new things? Now, as experts, we're so close to what we do, and there's so much emotions around what we're doing and why we're doing it, that it becomes very difficult to see the trees for the forest. And we want to explain as much as possible. And when we put this simple lens of a framework on, it takes 90% of what we want to say and really lets the gems show up. It's a big relief for the speaker, because you don't have to fill your slides up with 18 different bullet points and as much studies and quotes and text that you end up reading off of and your slides create yourself. But it gives you a simple way to talk about what you want to talk about that allows you to be present and engaged and serve the audience. And asking event planners what their audience needs, again, is one of the most underutilized resources out there. And if you understand this framework, then creating a talk can be a lot more simple, a lot more streamlined, and a lot more effective for everyone involved.
All right. So I know events that I help produce, the audience tells us in their feedback, the speakers need to be more actionable, item oriented, things that I can go do today. And you're telling me, don't do that. Help me make a paradigm shift. And the actions will come later, I assume, or are you thinking more about a keynote type of talk as opposed to a breakout where they really are coming for, show me how to do this?
There's a couple of different lenses to look at this. And I'll share a story about somebody that I worked with before with a similar problem that I think we can resolve all of these questions in one. I worked with a woman named Nicole Jardim, who was launching a book called Fix Your Period. She helps all kinds of women with hormonal and period problems get back in control of their health and their life. We were creating a signature talk to promote her new book. And one of the first teaching points we wanted to put together was, if you want to get in control of your hormones, you need to get in control of your blood sugar. Nicole had 12 ways that you could get in control of your blood sugar, and she starts listing them off, blah, 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 blah. And somewhere around point seven, I stop her and I say, Nicole, I'm going to pretend to be one of your clients. I'm not a very convincing woman, but maybe with the beard and hormone problems, it is a little bit like true. So I'm like, Nicole, I'm a hopeless person. I've tried every diet. I've tried all of these things. I'm not going to do 12 things to fix my blood sugar. I will do one thing and I will do it with my whole heart, but you have to promise me it has to be the easiest. Her first response, well, that's chew your food more. But chew your food more, how can I talk about that? Like, that's kind of boring, right? What else do I need to say? Chew your food more and that will help your blood sugar. But if we really start to think about what this teaching point means, there's a lot of good news in this for our audience that is actionable and paradigm shifting. First of all, chewing my food more, and if I just talk about that, that means to me as the audience member that I don't necessarily have to change my diet to get results. If I slow down and chew a little bit of food more, then my digestion's going to improve. I'm going to get health results. I'm starting to feel a little bit healthier just listening to this and imagining this. And if I have a large array of limiting beliefs like diets don't work for me. I don't have the willpower to do my diets. It's just genetic. And you give me this small dose of information that I can take home, that I can remember. Then I start to credit you with the whole path of the solution. And so that's the real balance here. We do want to give them something that feels actionable, that feels tangible, but a lot of times people overdo it and they would give all 12 points to fix your blood sugar rather than really expanding on one and showing the potential and possibility behind just one teaching point.
Especially if that paradigm shift will cascade into now what? And that could be where you present the list of 11 others. I'm thinking about an experience I had with AI, and our CEO, Mike Stelzner, is like super into AI. He has a podcast about it. He evangelizes it almost for marketers. And he and I met over coffee about almost a year ago. And he was saying, Phil, AI could be, unlock all kinds of possibilities for your business. And I was like, well, how? And he said, can I show you? And he pulls out his phone and he starts having a conversation with ChatGPT. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And then I went home and did it. And instead of him saying, here are 10 things you could do with AI, he showed me one, gave me the possibility. It was a paradigm shift. And now I've like produced some amazing reports, even got business as a result of what I can do going for a walk with AI. So I think that's kind of what you're talking about, is if you can create a paradigm shift, then you can share, here are the things that you can go do actionable. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Exactly. Because no amount of information about how to solve a problem is going to penetrate somebody's mind if they have a limiting belief. Like, for example, if it was AI and you thought to yourself, I'm not a very technical person, I don't know how to use these things. If he started talking about, well, you can use these custom GPTs and there's all these different softwares, it's not just ChatGPT, and you can create these page-long prompts that do this, all of that's going to go in one ear and out the other. Unless I can open up your mind to new possibilities, unless I can show you how to move forward, which will cause you to engage with the ideas. And as speakers, we need to understand that almost unless we are a total pioneer, which will still have its own set of problems, we're not the first speaker talking about this thing that our audience has heard. We're probably not even the 12th. And they have a long list of limiting beliefs and objections that are keeping them where they are right now. And we have to address those and open those up if we're going to be effective in getting them to change and take action, which is why they are coming to your talk and to your event.
Interesting. I want to know, what do you wish event producers or organizers were telling you when you ask about the audience and what they need? What things do you wish they would tell you so that you could serve the event better?
Some of the things that I think are most important for creating something that's compelling is understanding the audience's problem in their language. Not if I'm 10 years into solving the problem, I'm going to have a lot of very specific and specialized language around what I do. But if I start to think about how would my ideal client, the day before they meet me or see me speak, how would they talk about their problem with a friend? Or an even more interesting thought experiment is imagining this person calling you at 3 a.m. They can't sleep and they're in their most desperate, darkest state. And what do they talk about? And how do they describe what's going on? They're confessing things that they probably never said out loud before. And how can we speak to that mindset? And then the second one is, what are the biggest objections and limiting beliefs? And it's not necessarily objection to somebody buying something from me, which will hopefully, if you're a good speaker, will come naturally from that. But what are some of their objections and limiting beliefs to making the changes, implementing the things? Why do they feel stuck in their world and their life? And how can we open them up to new things? And an event host and an event producer is going to have their finger closest to the pulse on these things. They've created a community and people are showing up. So they're obviously on to something great. And it is one of the most underutilized resources that speakers have, because they're just trying to make sure that their booth gets in the right place, or they're trying to figure out when their speaking slot is, or a lot of the times they just want to get on the stage, and then they think once they're accepted at the event, then their job and their role communicating with the producer is done. But the speakers who get invited back, the speakers who get talked about among other event producers, which they certainly talk, and it's not that big of a circle. So things can go really well for you if you listen and collaborate and cooperate with your event producers. And if you're somebody who doesn't understand the needs of the producers as well, then you're not going to, your speaking career is going to be relatively short. And so picking on those key things and the converse of what those are, so the pain points and their confessions can lead us exactly to the results that they want, because oftentimes it's just the opposite polarity. Their objections and limiting beliefs show us exactly where they want to go, but haven't been able to on their own.
So as I study, you know, the people that come to the main event that I produce, I don't know the answers to those questions. I can tell you, here's who they, what they look like, roughly their age, their gender, where they're from, what their experience is, what they're most interested in learning. They do want actionable items, like they evaluate the conference in those kinds of terms. I don't necessarily know what their limiting beliefs are. I don't know what those things are on that level. If they're a pretty experienced audience, you know, I'm as a speaker not wanting to come in at the real basics. You know, I'm wanting to come in assuming that they've already made some paradigm shifts, but maybe it's the big leap that I forget Hendricks, what his first name is, but who talks about that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you hit this barrier, and maybe that's what you're talking about, a paradigm shift that's going to allow you to go to the next level. Is that how you would approach this? And would you even ask questions of someone like me to help understand what those limiting beliefs are?
Yeah, there's always going to be a new limiting belief. There's always going to be a paradigm shift. There's always going to be a blockage. And I've seen this occur at every level of success for every entrepreneur. And if we don't know those exact things, then it's worth doing the research. And if we know who's in the audience, then we can spend some time researching and understanding. And there are some ways that this can be somewhat predictable. We can figure out what their real problems and challenges are. And if we spend some time really having a conversation about, like, I do this all of the time on my podcast, where if I know what the problems and challenges are, then we can start to extrapolate. If my business isn't having enough cash flow, whether it's I'm just crossing the six-figure mark or I'm in multiple seven figures and I'm having a cash flow, we can start to infer and assume and spend some time being empathetic with our audience. How would not enough cash flow impact my experience with my partner at home? Am I trying to shield them from the stress and the challenge of making sure? How would not enough cash flow impact my relationship with my team? And starting to really spend the time and go deeper and just immerse ourselves in the client's experience will yield some really interesting things. And it starts with going a little bit deeper than, which is a great place to start, the demographics, where they come from, what's their current earnings, what's their current team size. And yeah, there's always going to be something that's keeping them from getting to the next level. If we can take the time to listen, and I think that great speakers, great storytellers, great communicators are fundamentally great listeners in the first place.
Yeah, I'm thinking of my friend John Acuff, who is a well-known keynote speaker, and he always tries to get time with an event where he gets the stories. He finds out what the blocks are in the audience so he can personalize his message to them. What I hear in what you just said is there's probably a couple things that you could do. One is have conversations, like get into a community of those people before the event and actually talk to them and find out their answers to some of those questions so you can get a picture of who they are. But also I bet AI could help you. If you were to say, you know, what are the common blocks for someone that looks like this? Would that be something you could use, or how would you do it if that was the case?
Absolutely. And let's be real. Like, you hold the keys to one of the most valuable experiences that any entrepreneur or expert in their domain or the particular domain that you serve could hold. And why an hour speaking in front of your audiences is one of the most important hours of my year or my decade, maybe even my life. And so isn't it worth taking the time to do that research? Isn't it worth taking that extra effort to coming up with something unique and valuable? And a lot of the times, because we're so busy managing the success and the teams and the things that we've already created, that we're too busy putting out the fires, and doing something like this on our own feels like we're just sitting on hot coals because there are so many fires that need to be put out in the rest of our life and the rest of our business. But yeah, I think ChatGPT is one of the best ways to start doing this. I've done this with some brand storytelling for some clients of mine. I was doing a brand story for an owner and a founder of a very high-end, high-profile mastermind, something that people pay $30,000+ to be a member of for a year. Now, I'm aware that there are 5 or 6 other masterminds out there. And so I put them all in a list, and I went to ChatGPT, and I did some deep research. And I said, these are the main competitors. I want to create a proprietary process, something that will highlight what is most unique and different about what this mastermind does compared to these other ones. Give me a list of what we should highlight. And just by putting in their web pages, it can start to search. It can start to see what the other 5 are highlighting and showcasing and what's different about this. And it can start to give me the key ingredients for a framework. There's a lot of information available out there from social media, from blog posts, from podcasts. And if you can take a little bit of time to gather this information, you can glean some great insights on your own without ChatGPT. But it certainly has helped me a lot in accelerating this process, making it a lot easier and a lot more powerful when I do use it.
I'm going to share something with event producers that I think is absolutely critical. You need data. So you need to ask your audience who they are, what they want to learn. Maybe it's not what's blocking them because they may not know, but you can ask them what's most important to you. What problems are you having, you know, on a list, which one is the most significant for you, and anticipating, you know, even what those problems are. And that's going to help you create a picture that then you could share with the Kyles of the world and the people that he serves so that they can come in and serve the audience. Would you add anything to that, Kyle?
Yeah. It's hard to do this on your own. It's hard because, again, we're so deeply immersed in our own expertise and we have our own emotions about what's important. And having someone else, a third party, a different perspective, create a little bit of friction, create a little bit of challenge for you, cause you to look a little bit deeper or look where you might not normally look, will help. And I find that most of the experts, if I'm quoting or referencing Eugene Schwartz, which is one of the greatest copywriters and one of the original copywriters of all time, most of the time, our experts were speaking on a solution level. Here's how to solve your problem. Here's why my thing solves the problem. Here's the solution. But we don't actually understand the experience of the problem. And we need to meet our audience where they are, often an earlier level to guide them to the solution. But because we're so excited and we're so immersed in what we do, and we've worked so hard on our software, on our program, and on our things, that we just want to talk about how awesome this solution is or how this solves the problem. But we're missing something critical in the foundation of what we're doing and why.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think there has to be an unlock. And, you know, I might teach you how to chew your food, to use your previous example. But if I know why chewing my food differently is going to lead to better health, weight loss, dealing with gut issues, et cetera, now I've got a framework for why, and it's going to shift the way that I think about the rest of my life. So I think that's really profound. I want to go back into an event, and speakers are coming. Besides not understanding the audience, which we've spent a lot of time on, what are some other mistakes that speakers make in terms of how to make the most out of an event?
I think one of the biggest mistakes that you can make is just fly in and fly out as a speaker, give your talk, and you're a busy person, you're an entrepreneur, you've got a business to run. And I think giving a great talk is the start of a conversation, but where you're really going to get the best results for yourself as a speaker, for the event hosts and the audience, is by taking the time and having these conversations, by being curious with the people, by sitting next to people at lunch and having these conversations, by talking to people on the floor, by participating in the conversation. People have traveled from all over the country, sometimes all over the world, to be at this place. And again, it's seeing it as some of the most valuable time you can spend, which a lot of speakers aren't seeing it this way. And these moments where you can connect and engage, the audience is going to feel more seen. They're going to feel more value out of the event. The event planners are certainly going to see you doing this and invite you to more, because that's what they want. They want to help people continue to come to this event. And I guess taking this a step back further, I haven't run a lot of live events, but I've run a podcast, and I can't tell you how many emails I get of people just saying, "Hey, have me on your podcast. I'll teach you these things." And a lot of times, if at best they say, "I'm going to help your audience with these things," but very rarely do people consider me and my goals and what I want. And the ones that can speak to me as a podcast host who spends hundreds of dollars on every episode, who's been at this for 5 years and have made this a labor of love, and as a result has created a podcast that people want to listen to and want to be on. If you can consider those needs and find ways to help them, and one of the easiest ways is to be present at the event that you're invited to, will pay dividends.
I totally agree. And sometimes what you're describing doesn't show up in a score. So a speaker might get, you know, a 4.5 out of 5, or even a 4.0 out of 5. So B minus. But if I see the way that they're investing in the event and the people, and people are gravitating toward that, that causes that score to go up. And I know the long-term impact of that speaker is greater than the speaker who flew in, got a 4.8 and left, because all they did was drop their knowledge. They didn't drop their presence, their person. They didn't add any value to people beyond that 1 hour or whatever amount of time that they had. So I completely agree that that's a game changer. And it feels like that person has become a partner with me, the event producer. They want to make the event better, the experience better, and they're going to get stuff out of it. If they're in the hallway talking to people, if they're sitting with people at lunch, people are going to pursue them. And sometimes that results in business opportunities.
Absolutely. And yeah, just like acknowledging and understanding, I think that these often speakers are so caught up. We're so caught up in our own problems and our own insecurities and our own things that we really forget. And producing an event, especially in these days where you are getting people traveling all over the country and sometimes all over the world, is one of the most challenging things to do. And a tremendous amount of effort and energy has gone into this. And so why wouldn't you want to make their jobs easier? Why wouldn't you want to give back in this way and create an experience that people want to come back to?
All right, I'm going to flip the script here for a second. You've already said that a producer can serve a speaker by giving them a clear picture of who they're speaking to. What's one or two mistakes that a producer can do or make that will cause a speaker to his effectiveness to be undermined?
So this is a little bit outside of my realm of expertise, so I may be off base with some of these, but I think one thing is considering, especially if you're managing sponsorships, considering where and when your sponsors are positioned in the schedule and thinking about their goals and what they're doing. If somebody's paid you a lot of money for a sponsored spot, and even though it's a main stage thing, but you put them at the end of the event where people are really exhausted after a lot of talks or disengaged, that's going to be difficult for them. I think simple things like how the speakers are welcomed, or where the positioning of their booths are relative to the main rooms. If the floor where everybody's kind of exhibiting on things is far away from the main stage, or where people are gathering, or is not in a pathway where they can be visible, is going to make it really, really hard for your speakers. And this is something negotiated in a lot of sponsorship opportunities, but the access that you can give to the audience or the speakers to the audience, either before or the after, if there's some ways that we can create some virtual content before so that people can get to know you, or how we promote and make people aware of when people are speaking and what we were doing and the information we can give, so that the speakers that we serve and have attracted can have a real clear picture of value to present to their audience, is going to be really, really important. And it's hard to consider all of these details when it's a logistical maze, and a level of detail and thinking of so many moving parts and so many moving things. It's beyond my capabilities, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for you for the work that you do. But finding ways that, especially for my sponsors, but also for my free speakers, to make sure that they are clearly connected with the people that they need to be, and they are creating ways to facilitate these conversations. Now I'm kind of going into solutions rather than mistakes, but I think it's a natural progression.
Well, but I think it all centers around one word, and that is communication. You know, the speaker needs to be in touch with the producer to understand their needs, and vice versa. You know, I'm sharing with you the information, here's who my audience is, but am I asking you, how can I best serve your needs? Now, if you're a speaker sponsor, that's one thing, but if you're not a sponsor, you still have goals at the event. So recently we had a speaker who complained because she wanted to be in the hallway talking to the audience, answering questions, because that's a way to generate leads. And something happened that prevented her from doing that for about 10 minutes. And she noticed that the line was much shorter than it might've been. And she was disappointed in that. If we would have understood how important that was to her, we would have said, let's don't do that between the end of her talk and the chance to connect in the hallway. So I think that conversation, that communication is critical. And I've noticed that speakers who don't read the communication that comes to them often tend to fail and get the lowest scores.
Well, it sounds obvious.
It does. Yeah.
And again, I think to get to where you are in the level of success, to be the entrepreneur that gets invited to events, that gets allowed there, takes a tremendous amount of effort and a tremendous amount of work. And the vision that you started out with to create your business, to create your expedition, in the process of building out the success, building out the teams, building out the systems, we often lose sight of that in the first place. And by spending the time answering these questions and thinking about how to best serve my people at an event puts you back in touch with what makes you a brilliant leader, what makes you a brilliant visionary, puts you back in touch with what the most valuable activity it is that you are doing. If we can have the courage to step away from the urgency that is natural in our everyday lives and see what's really valuable, it's transformational, not just for your audience, not just for the speakers, but for you as a leader. And this is kind of going back to everyone has this limiting belief or this paradigm shift that's necessary. And I believe that spending this time listening to your people, listening to the event planners, and taking this time can be one of the most transformational things that you do as a leader in how you relate to yourself.
This has been a profound conversation. Kyle, I want to ask you to do something that you weren't prepared to do, but you do a version of this on your own podcast. So I think this will still be easy. On your podcast, you'll tell a story about the guest in, you know, a lengthy manner to like tell their story, and it's something they can use. What I'd like you to do, if you would, is maybe in like 2 minutes, tell a story about the speaker that we're describing that captures the way that they should approach events and speaking. I don't know if that's something that you could do, if that makes sense, but I think it'd be powerful. And then I'm going to play a saxophone response to your story.
All right. We'll see what we can do. I'm going to do this from first person. I'll draw from my own experiences and the experience of hundreds of speakers that I've worked with. I wake up in the morning and my phone's already buzzing with requests from my team, with requests from clients. There's fires that need to be put out. And I don't have enough time to do all of these things because I'm getting on a plane. And the pressure to be me is so hard sometimes. The pressure that I have put upon myself to lead this team, to lead my clients, to create something valuable is all that I ever think about. And sometimes it's difficult to be present anywhere. On my team meetings, I'm thinking about the next thing that I need to do. When I'm at home, I'm constantly looking at my phone, checking my emails, and thinking about what tomorrow's going to bring. And then one day, I slow down and I pause. Maybe it's on a plane ride to my event. Maybe I have the courage to take a little bit of time to reach out to some of the attendees, to some of the event planners. And I start asking what they really need. And I start to see myself in some ways as I am now, and in some ways as I was before when I started out on this journey. And I see the needs and the limitations and just a desire for hope and for possibility. And it changes how I see who I'm serving. The audience is full of people with their own limitations, with their own things like me. And I've been selfish in only thinking about my role and my things and my problems. And in seeing these people all around us with their own needs, I start to see more opportunity, more clarity, more possibility. And I start to speak to that. I get a renewed sense of purpose in why I'm doing what I'm doing and why the world needs what I have to share. I am here for these people, and I'm so grateful that I've remembered that purpose again.
That's amazing. I love the way you ended that. I'm here for these people.
Kyle, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show. You told stories, you brought value, hopefully some paradigm shifts along the way. Can you please tell people where they can follow you online?
Absolutely. But first, I just have to thank you for sharing your music and sharing your soul. And as far as unforgettable experiences go, you are embodying a lot of the things that I have said by sharing who you are rather than just what you've done and what you know through this process. And that's what's making you unforgettable. It's creating your success and your impact. And it's a beautiful thing to witness.
Thank you.
For everyone out there, you can learn more about me. You can check out my podcast and lots of blogs and books and content on how to be a better speaker, how to get more conversions everywhere you speak, on webinars, on stages, on podcasts, at thestoryengine.co. You can find me at Hey Kyle Gray on Instagram, and I'm Kyle Gray on Facebook and LinkedIn. If you do Kyle Gray, perhaps storytelling, there's unfortunately a lot of Kyle Grays out there, but I would love to hear your story, connect with you, and see how we can make an impact in this world together, because there are people that need us. And I believe that more than ever in this world with increasing AI capabilities, that we have the human capacity to solve these problems by tapping into ourselves in the same way that you're playing that saxophone and sharing who we are. And it's what the world needs most right now.
Kyle Gray, thank you so much. You have brought so much value. Folks, follow him, and we'll see you on the next podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Event Innovator Show. Connect with Phil on philmachon.com, and be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode.